0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. Katie Allen with you until 3 o'clock today. Can I go to Deirdre now straight away? Deirdre, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
I'm good. Deirdre, I think a lot of us of a certain vintage are having flashbacks and deja vu to another World Cup in another far-flung destination.
Don't mention the war, Katie.
Well, I think it is nearly war now. I mean, are you Team Vera or Team Katie?
Well, I wouldn't like to pit myself like that, and I'm probably disappointed that it's going down that road. But I probably lean towards, I think that Vera Powell deserves some respect, and I'm really disappointed that the end of such an historic moment for women's football and women's sport in general has descended into kind of a tit for tat row. It's just, I had texted earlier just to say I despair that it's ending like this, and I think it's a terrible sour note after such brilliant, brave performances on the pitch and such a breakthrough moment for women in sport and for young girls playing soccer. I just despair. Please don't let it end in a big row over, you know, her management future. How can she have gone from being manager of the year, you know, voted that way and held in such high regard, and we're talking a few minutes, you know, weeks later now about, you know, her tenure as manager. I can't believe it. I just despair that it's ending like this.
I know. I mean, to go back to the start of this, there was definitely tensions there before they ever left for Australia, but I think they were sort of put to one side while everybody's focus was on trying to get out of this group of death.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think that the incident that kind of brought this, you know, up to the surface again, which is mm-hmm. this incident from the Nigerian match, what do you make of that? Because there is two very, in exactly the same way as we go back to the Saipan story, there's some very firm views on both sides of that as to who was in the right or who was in the wrong there.
Well, my view on it would be, so I can understand Casey McCabe's frustrations. I mean, she obviously, from her performances at the World Cup, she was the standout player in the team. She was the leader. Was she the Roy Keane of this team? I don't know, even saying something like that. But she's that type of player. She brings the rest of the team on. And obviously she was frustrated. She wanted to probably get a goal. Maybe she wanted fresh legs on. And that's like a fair comment to make. But I suppose, who's the manager? And the manager is Vera Powell. And I think it's as simple as that for me. But I mean, you know, dressing room spats or disagreements of opinions are part of sport.
Yeah, I think, if we could put a positive spin on this, Deirdre, could you say, you know, it shows that we're all grown up now in terms of women's sport, women's soccer, that we're at the level, we're having conversations as we would have had around the men's football team at a World Cup.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, of course, we should be questioning, you know, that's the kind of conversations we would have had, you know, about the men's teams, you know, who should be playing up front? Should she have substituted somebody earlier? You know, the formation of play. Great that's the kind of things that we're discussing. But let's not have the girls come home from a World Cup where they've, you know, broken through the glass ceiling of getting to this level of elite sport at a world level, that we're now having, like, you know, a fight over the manager. I mean, she was a major part of getting the women there in the first place by implementing a professional training regime and, you know, playing at a professional level. Like, Vera Powell is part of that as much as Katie McCabe is.
I could say, is it even football if we're not fighting about the manager? I mean, surely that is actually part of the beautiful game. In terms of how they've both handled themselves in this, though, because, I mean, it didn't help matters that when this was brought up at the post-match press conference, that Vera Powell seemed to indicate that Katie McCabe wanted her to take off one of her teammates. I mean, that was, you know, and actually mentioned Sinead Farrelly, who I'm sure the last thing she wants to have done was to be dragged into the middle of all of this. But, you know, Vera Powell saying everybody, she didn't want to make a change because everybody was doing so well. Sinead Farrelly was arguably the best player on the pitch at that moment, so I was not prepared to take the best player off. Like, strongly hinting there that Katie McCabe wanted her to take that particular player, take Sinead off.
I don't know, possibly that is just Vera Powell's nature. She's very direct in the way she speaks. Like, I think that's just refreshing from her. That's the way she usually is. She doesn't really mince her words. I don't necessarily think that she was probably digging back. I'd probably give her the benefit of the doubt on that. I don't know.
I wonder, as you say, Vera is obviously Dutch and the you know, very, very, as you say, very, very direct in how she talks about everything,
she
really.
She probably feels as frustrated as Katie felt, you know, on the night on the pitch. She probably feels the same with regards to her future, because I'd say she's probably looking at it like, how's it coming to this? How am I in this position? You know, a few weeks ago, everybody was celebrating the fact that they were going, and everything was on a positive spin. And now we're, depressingly in an Irish situation, like, where we're, you know, questioning whether she should be the manager.
Do you think Katie has let herself down a bit, Katie McCabe?
I really don't want to criticise her, because I think she's been a fantastic leader, but possibly, you know, questioning your manager on the pitch probably wasn't the right thing to do. It's probably obviously going to lead to tension. But she's a fantastic sports person. I just really admire her, and the way she played, she was just fantastic, and her goal will be something that we'll all remember forever, you know.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, honestly, I don't think there's a single person who would have a moment's hesitation in supporting that line. Deirdre, she was an amazing amazing captain for that team, as you say, not just for the performance she put in herself, but how she brought that team together and raised up the sense of that they could do this.
I suppose when I texted earlier about how I despair, I'm not despairing at Katie, and I'm not despairing at Vera. I'm despairing at the situation that we should, you know, be celebrating this moment. They're coming home, right? They probably obviously are disappointed because they had it within their grasp to get a result in at least one of those three games. I thought they were fantastic, and, you know, they got further than probably a lot of people expected in terms of the performance. So I'm not disappointed in Katie McCabe, because I think she's just a fantastic sports person and she deserves all the plaudits she gets. And same for Vera Powell. Just that we don't come home from World Cup on a sour note. Please don't do that. That was my point.
Do you think it shouldn't be reported?
We've done so much now for women's sport. Like, you know, they've really broken through a ceiling. Like, I grew up in the 80s. I went to school, primary school. No girls played soccer in my school in the 80s. And now, from my children's perspective and from my son's perspective, he doesn't see any difference. He's supporting the women as much as he would have supported the men. And that's progress. Like, that's huge progress. So I just would hate to see it end on a sour note.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, are you critical of the media for highlighting this to the degree, or are focusing on this to the degree that they have, or do you kind of understand that this has to be done too?
Yeah, of course they do. And of course, you know, if there's a story there, of course the media are going to report on it. But when Tony asked the question of Vera Powell about her tenure as manager in the first press conference that it was raised, and I just thought, oh God, here we go. And now it's descending into something else this morning. So I'm just really disappointed in that. I don't blame Tony, because that's his job. He's a sports correspondent. He has a job to do. I'm just disappointed that it's ending on a bad note.
Okay. Breach Conway. Breach, good afternoon.
Hello, Katie. Good night from okay. From Australia.
You're still out there, of course, Breach. Yeah. Where are you now?
Yeah. I just flew back down from Brisbane this evening, so I'm back in Sydney, back with family in north of Sydney now, yeah, tonight.
And Breach, we spoke before it all got going, and it went a lot better, I think, in some ways than a lot of us had hoped, but maybe not quite as well as it might have done.
Yeah, I was just listening to that call. Was it Deirdre?
Deirdre, yeah.
And I agree with so many points that she said. And again, I suppose even by sort of taking part in this conversation, there is the danger that we're giving fuel to this spat, I think is what Deirdre called it, which it is. You know, let's be honest, you know, they're all adults, you know, there are all kinds of, you know, opinions and mindsets going out there. You know, one of the things we have to bear in mind as well is at the end of a game, you know, it's probably the worst time to do a press conference, you know, because emotions are still high. I think we shouldn't be sort of, well, first of all, I wouldn't equate it to the Roy Keane Saipan thing, because I think that in itself is going to elevate it to a level of conflict that isn't there.
Well, can I just say, put one thing to you, though, as you say, it's just a spat and whatever. But Vera Powell's future as manager of the team is on the line here. And Katie McCabe hasn't exactly helped her in that regard in terms of, and she's been, you know, and she's been asked about it a number of times now, and she has been less than supportive.
To be honest,
I think any player,
men, women, premiership or whatever, I don't think any player is going to come out and jump up and down and advocate, you know, for their coach, you know, to be signing a contract, you know, on air, because it probably would be naive of them, because if that manager is gone the next day, well, then he or she is going to look rather stupid. You know, I mean, I think while they're in the bubble out here, I think you're going to get the same sort of answers. I think that's probably understandable.
The answers were happening before they left Irish soil, in fairness, Bridge. This coolness has been going on for a while.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And again, I'm quite sure it's not all sweetness and light. But again, going back to Deirdre's point, and my main concern would be, having been out here and seen the games, is I think it would be a real travesty if the focus becomes purely on the drama rather than, you know, the achievement. And as say, you know, again, you know, we were drawn in the group of death, and it proved to be the group of death. And I think the frustration for me as a fan, and having been at all the games and seeing the individual and collective performances, is I think the frustration is that we very nearly got it. You know, we should have, you know, with a little bit of luck and a little bit more confidence probably and finesse, we would have got out of that group of death. You know, I'm just looking at the England game tonight. We'd be looking at playing England if we'd come second. So the near miss, particularly the Canada game, yeah. I think that's the one. So what I'm saying is, at the end of those three games, there's an awful lot of frustration. And definitely, you know, Katie, you know, the frustration's definitely got to her. But I want to echo what Deirdre said there. I mean, I think we have to have, perspective about things. And again, I just hope that, you know, the media and that everybody doesn't focus on the drama now and forget about the achievement, because it's been phenomenal. Now, in relation to Katie McCabe, again, she's superb. But I have to say as well, there were other players who stood out in my, like, I mean, Denise O'Sullivan is just sheer class. I mean, the defence last night against Nigeria, like, Louise Quinn was, you know, carrying an injury. I mean, she was a doubt at one stage. I could go on. Courtney Brosnan, I mean, there were players all over the place. Ruisha Littlejohn, you know, I'd be afraid to leave out someone, because they all performed really, really well. And I really do believe that we were very unlucky not to get something from the other games. But as I say, it was always going to be difficult to progress in the group. And unfortunately, that's what came to pass. But I think, again, I would be very disappointed if, you know, at home. And I know, like, when you're out here, we've been in a bubble. Okay, you know, you're just meeting Irish fans, or meeting Irish fans, and you see and hear a certain amount, maybe, you know, a line or two from somebody's analysis, or you might see a clip, a video of the press conference or something. But, you know, you are removed from the whole thing. So I suppose we're aware of some of the negativity, but I just hope that it doesn't distract and deflect from what is still has been a fabulous achievement. And I believe that the fruits of this first World Cup will actually be with the growth in interest and enthusiasm in years to come, because you know young girls and you know, young women have seen that it's a real thing to aim for now.
You have to see it to be it. Yeah, that's definitely been part of this story. I just want to bring in, because we're getting a lot of calls in and I don't want to leave anybody hanging. Can I bring in Liam? Liam, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
I'm good. Where do you stand on this, Liam?
Look, I agree with a lot of whatever the previous speakers have said. Katie McCabe is a great player, great leader, everything. But I think she has shown disrespect to her coach, and I think she should apologise.
Do you?
Oh, absolutely, yes. And I feel if she apologises, this will go away. But until she does that, and look at the incident, really. She's a fine player. I can understand her frustration as captain, wanting to win, because I know she's a winner, wants to win, like all the girls are. And she was going up the left flank, and she was being tracked by a Nigerian opponent. Katie was in front, dribbling up the left flank, near where the coach was, and she was dispossessed. And that frustrated her so much. Then she came back and she reacted then with the coach. And normally, if they were taking off somebody, it would be, I think, it's Farrelly is the girl's name. Is it Sinead Farrelly?
Sinead Farrelly, yeah.
Yeah. That was probably her best game, Sinead Farrelly.
Well, that's what Vera Powell was saying.
As well, yeah, and I would question as well the RTE commentator, I think his name is Sadler, ex-player.
Richie.
Richie Sadler, at the very first match, he questioned why the coach had picked Sinead Farrelly first. Had questioned. And she, to me, would have been one. Over the three games, she would be my number one performer.
OK, well, I mean, Richie Sadler is entitled to his analysis of the
I'm entitled to my opinion.
Indeed, Liam, you are. But I'm saying, would this not be something that you would see, though, at that level in other matches? Would you say that there would never be a situation where...
I have played very representative rugby and hurling and done athletics as well. And I can tell you one thing, you don't question your coach. If you have an issue in private, yes, by all means, and a good coach will always listen. But you do not bring anything like that. You do not show that on the field. You just don't do it. It's particularly a captain.
But
does not do it.
I don't know. Are you pressing the phone there, Liam? There's a
No. I'm
okay,
not, no.
We'll carry on. Obviously, though, you know, we can't look at this incident in isolation from what we know is a cool relationship between Katie McCabe and Vera Powell. Because we know when Katie McCabe was asked before they left for Australia and indeed after that match, was she backing Vera Powell getting that extension on her contract? She basically talked around it without saying yes. Liam.
Okay, but that's the more reason why Katie shouldn't have done what she did on the pitch as captain.
So you have no, you give her no.
No, she's wrong. A player in public, particularly a captain, questioning in public with cameras, everything, questioning the coach. You don't do that. That's not the way it works. You must. The coach is in charge. Of course, coach is the boss. And Katie McCabe is a fine player, a great player. I think all this now is creating some people a bit of a division. And I think the girls have done fantastic to get there, and the coach obviously. And this is what we're talking about instead of talking about the achievements. And listen, they were only beaten by one goal on two games and a draw. I think it's sad, and I just think I could be wrong, but maybe with all the frustration and everything, in Katie's mind, it could have looked good to do what she did in her mind. But to me, it looked bad as a former player and a former captain of teams.
Okay, will you hang on, Liam, because I've got Jack on another line hanging on. Jack, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Would you agree with Liam there?
Everybody's entitled to their own opinion, Katie, and I have my opinion, okay?
What is your opinion?
My opinion is that Katie McKay went to Vera Powell and said, "Will you take me off, please, and bring in one of the substitutes?"
Where,
I think that's what she said.
But how would you think that?
Because, okay, they couldn't qualify at this stage, and captains usually are people of integrity and principles and leaders. So I think that's what she wanted to do.
I couldn't accept that.
Liam?
Pardon?
Yeah, go. Sorry, is that Liam?
Yeah, speaking, yeah, Liam. Can I talk? Yeah?
Yeah, go on.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. I don't know, what was that man's name? Jack, is it?
Yeah.
Yes. And I fully agree, everybody is entitled to their opinion, Jack. But first of all, how do you know that's what she said? Because nobody has brought this up yet. And I couldn't hear her saying anything because I was sitting at home in my house watching the match in Ireland. So how you can come up with that baffles me. But maybe you have an inside track. I don't know.
If I was the captain of a team, that's what I would do.
Okay. But Jack, that's sure you can't. That's no.
You're only surmising.
Yeah, you can't. Exactly. You can't. There's nobody has given Natty, not Katie McCabe or anybody else, has suggested that was the conversation she had with Vera Powell on the sideline at that point. And
nobody
certainly, and if that were the case, like the serious questions would have to be asked about how it was represented then in terms of that post-match conference, because certainly Vera Powell didn't give the impression that it was herself she was asking to take off.
She didn't say it wasn't either.
She said, if she refused McCabe, she said, no, she didn't go into the detail, but honestly, certainly the impression was given that it was somebody else.
One of the best players on the team, she said.
She said, everybody was doing so well. Sinead Farrelly was arguably the best player on the pitch at that moment, and I was not prepared to take the best player off. So she was clearly suggesting there that it was Sinead Farrelly that she was being asked to take off.
Yeah, but she didn't specify it as Sinead Farrelly. She could have been any one of a number of players, but they're all playing very well. And Katie McCabe, in my opinion, was one of the best players on the field. And I think captains are usually selected because they're people, as I said before, of integrity and stuff like that. And I think it was along those lines she was going, because I don't think Katie McKay would go to the Vera Powell and say, take off such and such a one. That wouldn't be her place to do it. I think she should just have taken off herself and given a chance to the subs who might never even get a chance of playing in a World Cup match.
There is that question, actually, Liam, if I can put to you, that you know, we were in a match, you know, this match was not going to take us out of the group, no matter how many goals we might score in it. Would it not have been a time for Vera Powell to give some of the rest of the bench a run out? Would that have been the end of the world, and would it not have been?
First of all, I disagree with Jack. I don't know how he can come to that conclusion, but he's entitled to his opinion. Secondly, from what I'm reading is that the coach felt she wanted to draw at all costs. She didn't want to lose the match. And why should she take off Sinead Farrelly or someone when there was nobody really playing bad? Why change the team if you're happy to go for a draw at this stage by bringing in somebody about 5 minutes ago or whatever it was? That was her call, and she's entitled to it as the coach. Yeah. And I think she made the right call.
Do you think
Liam, if you had a daughter on the subs bench today, or sorry, whenever the match was on, okay, and Katie McCabe went to Vera Powell and said, bring on Liam's daughter there because she might get a chance to play in the game again, I'm sure you'd be delighted with it.
I'd be delighted, but the coach makes that decision, not me.
I understand that totally. But maybe Katie McCabe suggested that, maybe. That's the point I'm making.
Well, you see, we can't assume what she suggested because we don't know.
We're in the realm of Jack, I must put you that what you're suggesting, nobody is suggesting. That's a completely a new possibility that you're entering into it, and it seems to be very far off what we understand to have been.
That's just my opinion. That's my opinion, Katie.
Okay, let me just ask Liam. Liam, do you think Vera Powell deserves to have her contract extended after Australia?
Absolutely. Look at what she has achieved. Just look at it. She's got the team there. Look at the nation. Look, I have a daughter living in Sydney. I can tell you, it's the excitement of all this. The Irish people, you know, like the businesses and all that, didn't put all the flags around it, which I'm disappointed with, I have to say. I'm disappointed with it. But that's past now. But she has done a great job. She's got us there. And we performed exceptionally well. Exceptionally well.
Do you think that future is in doubt because of, you know, what is clearly a difficult now relationship with the captain?
I don't think it should even arise. I think FAI should be strong enough that a player should not ever dictate to the management or to the coach. And I think people should be brought in, put heads together, come up with a positive solution and constructive solution based on our achievements. The coach has done nothing wrong. I would say, I'm not media bashing, but I think the media have taken it a little bit too far. But they will do that anyway. That's their job to do it.
Hang on a minute, Liam. It's a job to cover. I mean, you can't. Are the media supposed to not cover it because it's a positive story and it's our first World Cup for the women's
Katie,
team?
Katie, I agree with you 100%, but it's just my opinion that I think it's great for them because it's something to talk about, you know, and that's your job, of course. But I don't think somebody should be the fall person, particularly the coach. I don't think she should be.
Liam, will you
I
say...
Yes. I think she's done exceptionally well.
And a lot of people agreeing with you, Liam, that's for sure. Can I bring in Catherine Byrne? And it's Catherine, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Catherine, would I have interviewed you in a different context?
You probably would have.
You are a former minister for the drug strategy, right?
I was, yeah.
But you're also a former soccer player.
I am indeed, I suppose the reason why I did text the programme the other day was the coverage on RTE regarding the panel and before the Nigerian match was mostly centred around the manager, which I thought was truly unfair to the players who were going out onto a pitch to give their all for this, for the World Cup and for the country. And I think what we've spiralled into now, unfortunately, has divided a lot of people out there, particularly listening to other speakers. But I think what we should do now is unite. And we have a team coming home now from the World Cup, the first women's in this Ireland ever to reach this stage. I think we should unite and give them the welcome that we gave Jack Charlton and the men's team when they arrived back from their conquest. And I just think at the end of the day, regarding Katie McCabe and all the other people who played, O'Sullivan and Young Lark and Quinn, the whole lot of them, every one of them played a heart out on that pitch. And I know, as I watched all of the matches with my family and my grandchildren, there was great, great pride in the house, emotion, even tears. And I think now we've got to the stage now that's a name blame thing, and that's wrong. I think Vera Powell has done a fantastic job at this team. So has Katie McCabe as the captain. Her emotion, her pride, and our frustration as well, and all of those are expected when you're a captain on a team. But most of all, she gave huge leadership to everybody on that team. And to start, I think, now bringing it all back down to Boyle over who said what is wrong, I think it's time now we took these girls home into the country. I don't know where they are. They could be in the air for all I know now. And welcomed them home and truly gave them the welcome they deserve. They were outstanding. It fills my heart to see women standing in a jersey for Ireland on a World Cup stage. And I think that's what we should be celebrating. Whatever has happened in between personalities, I think that should be left aside for now and that sorted out into the future and unite together. And I really hope in vain the city council, the government and everybody comes together to bring back these women who deserve full support right across the country. But I would just like to make one last comment, and I know it's too late now, but I was very disappointed with people not having their flags out for this ladies' team that went away. They were superb, and they were in a very difficult group. And I believe they came out on top of that group. And I listened to other managers speak about the Irish team and other players, and particularly the fans in Australia and New Zealand. Oh, my God. You know, it was just sent shivers up your spine to see so many people put on the green jersey and stood there to support these young women. It was like as if they were playing at home, to be honest with you. I'm disappointed and sad like everybody else. They didn't qualify into the next round. But this is only beginning, I believe, of a huge impact that this women's team is going to have for the next 10, 20 years with women's football in Ireland.
Catherine, would you say, seeing where Vera brought this team, Vera Powell, would you say the FAI should extend her contract?
I tell you, I was disappointed that if it came down to interviews with young players who are ready to go out on the pitch regarding whether or not a manager should stay. I think that was, to me, that was the most disappointing about the panel before the Nigerian team, and putting a mic under players and asking them, well, do you support A, B or C? I think it's wrong. I think what has to happen now, the FAI have to step up to the mark and make a decision quickly and not leave people hanging out there. I think Vera Powell done a fantastic job. She brought women and the Irish team to the first World Cup ever, and I think we need to give praise where praise is due, and to all of the players and those who didn't even make it onto the field, the back team, the physiotherapists, the medics, anybody else who was in that back room. We owe them a huge debt of gratitude, and not to be sniping on radio over them. I think let's welcome them home, hang out the flags. This is not over. This is a new journey we're going to start into the future with our young children. And I know I regularly go to matches up in Kilnamani, where Kate McCabe is from. And it's absolutely, it's fantastic to go into Kilnamani and see the green, white and orange flying in every house. It's just an amazing time for women in football and for women in general in any kind of sports. When I played soccer, it was in the very early days of the 70s, and we weren't acknowledged the way people are now. But, like, I mean, we all gave a hand in promoting what I believe is the future for young Irish women in soccer. So please, please, as a parent and as a grandparent, let's unite now and welcome this team home. They deserve all our praises and all our support. And I'm hoping that I can make it into town with some of my grandchildren, not them all, because some of them are too young, and stand there and wave our tricolour and support of them.
Okay. Thanks for that, Catherine. And before we move off this, and speaking of the tricolour, Frank, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie.
What happened to you this morning, Frank?
Katie, this morning my wife and I had a need to visit the local branch of the Bank of Ireland in Cork, where we live. And while the person in the bank was dealing with the query that we had, he asked us to take a seat. And the seats we were sitting on were beside a table, and the national flag was draped on the table with various banking-related forms on top of it. And, you know, my wife and I said, this doesn't seem right for the national flag. It's disrespecting the national flag that it would be sort of used as a tablecloth like that, you know. Yeah. So we mentioned it to the staff member, you know, when he came back to us, and we said it was disrespectful to the national flag, as indeed it would be to any country's national flag. And he sort of laughed as if we were joking and said he thought it looked nice, right? Personally, I sort of thought that he thought we were some sort of class of crank, right? Okay.
Right.
So we asked to see the manager and basically got no joy. The manager wasn't available. We then asked this gentleman for his card and his name so that we could follow up with Bank of Ireland at a higher level. Anyway, after much humming and hawing, he said he didn't have a card, and he mentioned his first name. He wouldn't tell us his surname because he said this wasn't allowed by the bank's GDPR policy. Now, we find it shocking, really, that Bank of Ireland, the national bank, I suppose, doesn't understand how the national flag should be displayed and respected. And secondly, how GDPR can be interpreted in a manner like this, which seems ludicrous to us, you know.
GDPR does seem to be invoked in all sorts of circumstances.
Totally, yes.
Was that the finish of it for you, Frank, then?
Well, we came away with a feeling of frustration about this, you know, and in fact, I plan on going back tomorrow. I didn't take a picture of this, but I plan on going back tomorrow to see if it's in the same position to take a picture of it, and if it is, to sort of raise it again with somebody else in Bank of Ireland.
Well,
you know?
Let me tell you, Frank, I doubt if it will be in the same position, because we got on to Bank of Ireland and asked them about this. And they just gave us a couple of lines in response. We apologise, they say. We apologise for any upset or offence caused to the listener this morning. The flag was in the branch in support of the Irish women's soccer team, but placing materials on the flag is inappropriate and should not have happened. So you were right, Frank.
Yeah. Yes, in fact, I don't think it's appropriate to drape it like a sort of a covering on a table either, is it?
No, indeed. We'll. I think that's as far as with as much as we'll get out of Bank of Ireland on that one. But Frank, thank you for that. You made your point, and it has been acknowledged and apologised for. We'll take a break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And we've had a lot of callers and listeners in touch with us on this show over the last number of weeks. Complaining and concerned about incidents in the inner city in Dublin and Dublin city centre. But it appears you don't have to go into the city centre to have an incident. I want to go to Anna now. Anna, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. Thank you for having me.
Yes, Anna, tell me about this. You take in foreign students over the summer, is that right?
Yes, usually the month of July.
Right.
And, for the month.
And this month? And in July and this year you had?
I had two Italian and two French for the last 2 weeks in July. And the first 2 weeks I had a Czech, a French, a Spanish and an Italian.
Fair play to you.
So the reason why I'm ringing you today is because French student I had, a lovely boy, was attacked in an elevator in Dundrum Town Centre on Friday evening at 8:30. And I was just devastated.
Just okay, so tell me exactly what happened. Was he on his own up there, or what was happening?
No, it was their second last day, so they went out for a meal to McDonald's, and then they just went shopping, and two of them got into an elevator to just buy something in particular, and there was four boys that got in after them and beat the two of them up in the elevator. Now, nothing was taken, no phones or money or anything like that. So it was just his glasses were smashed and his face.
And so, obviously, this was their goodbye to Dublin evening out, basically, in Dundrum Shopping Centre.
And this particular boy was in Cork last year in Carrigaline, and he had a great time, and that's when he came back to Dublin, mm-hmm. you know, just to see what Dublin was like. And when the students arrive in my house, I always say to them now, no city centre, you know, because it's dangerous, it's like Paris, it's like Milan. So I just couldn't believe it, you know, when they said they were going down. I always advertise Dundrum Town Centre because it's so near me, and they have great fun down there with the television for the Euros and things like that, you know, and for the Ladies World Cup. But
and there's
not
so
this
many,
time.
And there's so many. I mean, if you do, I mean, I would be very familiar with Dundrum Shopping Centre. So many young people, you know, hanging around there now, hanging out over the holidays, meeting up with friends. It just feels like a totally safe environment that you would have no issue at all if your young teenager wanted to hang out there for a while.
Absolutely, but it isn't anymore. And that's one thing that is definite. And thank you for allowing me to highlight it, because it's totally changed, you know.
The
security are very good down there, you know, and they have been, when I rang them and all of that, they have been marvellous. But you just have to highlight it, because it's not safe. It's not safe, and that's it, anywhere.
And what was there any indication that he had upset these lads that attacked him, or that he had crossed swords with them in some way, or had any words with them? Like any indication of what was going on here?
Well, seemingly there was five young females that were following them when they went outside the town centre just to get a bun, you know, to finish off their dinner. Mm-hmm. And they were being followed by these girls. And one of the boys took out his phone and he pretended to be ringing the guards. And I don't know if they took offence to that, but they followed them, all of them, back up to the town centre. And one of them saw one of the girls using her phone. I'm not sure if it has any connection, but I think it may have. But I mean, I'm not a detective, but they were ambushed, you know.
So shortly after they saw this girl, one of these girls who'd been following them.
Yes.
They saw them making a call. These other boys turned up then.
Yeah.
And followed them into a lift.
Yes, an enclosed lift, yeah.
And then physically attack them.
Oh, absolutely. His face destroyed. It was destroyed. And he went home now on Sunday morning. But he was lovely.
Yeah. And I can hear you, Anna. You're upset, obviously. I mean, you obviously kind of mother these students that you have, and you feel responsible for them.
Oh, absolutely, you do. Because, I mean, they're somebody else's children.
Did he need medical help for what they did to him?
Yes, he went with his leader to the guards in Dundrum and reported it. And for insurance purposes also, for his replacement spectacles. But he went to Vincent's and he came home at 3 o'clock in the morning. And he said to me, you know, it was too long and that he was going to go back in the morning. And I said, OK, fine. We had a short chat about it, but he was very tired at that stage. And the following morning, then he got up and he didn't feel like any breakfast. So I had told them that I was going to do an Irish breakfast for all of them on Saturday morning. So I just gave him a sausage sandwich and sent him off. He was delighted with that and a bottle of water and some fruit, because I said, in hospitals in Ireland and probably everywhere, you're going to be delayed. So I drove him down to the Lewis where he was meeting his leader. And they went to St. Michael's in Dunleary. And we're seeing to within an hour, which I was thrilled about. And he needed a special letter to get on the Aer Lingus flight, you know, because one of his eyes was so badly damaged that with the pressure of the plane, you know, he wouldn't have been allowed to fly if he didn't have this letter.
Right. So really, it was a very serious assault.
Oh, it was, absolutely. And all he kept saying to me was, it could have been worse. You know, there was four against me kind of thing. And sure, God love him, he couldn't see his face all the time, the way we could see it getting darker and redder and more swollen. You know, it was just awful.
Terrible sending a young man like that home to his family in France in that condition. You know, when he just came for, you know... It really is horrible. It is a terrible, terrible, and really shocking that this would happen at 8:30 of an evening in Dundrum Shopping Centre in a lift.
Yes, which is busy evening.
Yeah, just extraordinary. And am I right in thinking those lifts in the shopping centre, you can actually see into them?
Like that? Yes, you can. You can see into them, and then there is a wall, and seemingly they stop the lift. And that's where the beating, most of it, happened. And then when they got down to -1, they threw him out on the hallway and beat him there. But there was another boy that wasn't staying with me with him. Now, he got injured as well, but he escaped. And he raised the alarm. He went up because everybody else was up on level 3 and security were there, so they contacted security and security told them to stay where they were, that they had the cameras and that. But it was a little bit later, I suppose 10, 15 minutes, a long time when your friend is attacked and you just want to be with him.
Yeah.
But then they saw him coming up on the escalator and the security looked after his base. You know, they had, attended to his cuts.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, presumably there will be CCTV available in relation to this, so we won't say any more in relation to the investigation that no doubt is underway now into what happened. But
absolutely, because I am going to follow this up. I mean, he's gone back to Paris, but I assured him that I wasn't going to forget about it.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
And so hopefully they'll get somebody.
Yes, absolutely, because that is a terrifying and really traumatic attack on a young man who was just going about his business.
But people's children, you know, when the student's season is nearly over now, you know, it's going to be somebody's Irish child, you know, that this could happen to.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm highlighting it. And thank you very much, Katie.
No, thank you, Anna. It's, as you say, very, very important to highlight this and to let people know that this is what's happening now. We need to know that. And can I say, any student, Anna, would be very lucky to come to Ireland and find themselves in your house. There's no doubt about that, having talked to you now.
Thank you.
Thanks, Anna.
Thank you, Katie.
We'll take a break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And I want to go to Sarah now. Sarah, good afternoon. Do we have Sarah? We don't have Sarah coming up on the line now. Are we trying to find Sarah? Okay, we'll move on. Can I bring in Cassie? Cassie, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Cassie, a totally different subject than what we were talking about before the break there. Tell me what happened to your family and your attempts to get a taxi.
Okay, so we're a family of four, myself, my husband, 6-year-old daughter and 8-year-old son. My 8-year-old son, Harvey, he has autism and he has a moderate global delay. So we were lucky enough to be selected for an assistance dog for Harvey, because if we go out without the assistance dog, Harvey is a flight risk. So he'll run off. If you try to hold his hand, he'll throw himself on the ground. So we were literally like prisoners in our own home before we got the dog.
Right. And so how long have you had the dog, Cassie?
We have the dog a year now this week.
Oh, okay.
And it's still a bonding process. You know, we're still working on building the bond between Harvey and the dog. And it's working, but it's slow.
Mm-hmm.
However, we went out on Saturday, as we do. We go to the same restaurant every week, because Harvey has accepted there. He loves it. He's welcome with open arms. And we get to go out as a family. So we went, we had a lovely day. As we came back to get a taxi, my husband was walking slightly ahead of me with my little girl, Charlie, and I was behind with Harvey, and because he was attached to the dog and I was walking the dog. So my husband pulled a taxi on the road, and he took the fare. My husband got in, he strapped Charlie in, and I kind of came behind him and took Harvey off the attachment lead off the dog and put him in the back and strapped him in. So as I opened the front door of the taxi to get in, because normally the dog sits by my feet in the front of the taxi, the taxi driver told me that he's not taking that dog. He did not see that dog when he took the fare, and he told us all to get out of the car.
Like that, yeah. in that tone?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You're going to have to get out of the car. I did not see that dog. And I said, he's an assistance dog. He's for my little boy, Harvey. He says, I don't care. I says, you know, it's an offence. You have to take the dog. He says, I'm not taking that dog. Now, I kind of said, oh, well, will we ring the guards? But my little boy was getting very upset in the back of the car. Because we're trying to build the bond with the dog, any rejection or anything like that could cause a separation between the two of them. Yeah. So we ended up getting back out of the car. Yeah. I pleaded with him. I asked him, I said, Do you not understand the rules and regulations? It's against the law. And I actually said to him, do you think I enjoy having to bring this dog everywhere with us? Like, because it's heart-wrenching every time I look at Harvey's little face, you know? Mm-hmm. And for us, we were expecting the dog to kind of broaden our horizons. We'd be able to do this, we'd be able to do, you know, go out as a family. And unfortunately, that's the second time that has happened to us in a year.
Again, with a taxi driver the last time as well.
With a taxi driver, yeah.
And as you say, just to be absolutely clear about this, it is the taxis who take a fare are legally obliged to bring an assisted
dog. Oh, they're legally obliged, dog, yeah. If they have a cert to say they have an allergy, that's okay, but they have to produce the cert there and then. That's the only exemption they'll have.
And just, like, forget about the law even. Like, I just astonished that a taxi driver would look at a family like yours and not think, well, you know.
And, you know, Harvey is he's beautiful. He's gorgeous. He's that, like, we adore him. And he's very obviously autistic. Like, he stims a lot, you know. So there was no confusion. You know, he wouldn't have been confused. And I said, he's from Irish Guide Dogs for the Blind. And I pointed at his coat. Mm-hmm. And I said, you can't be doing this. And he was like, no. And he got out of the car and opened the back doors and everything and told my husband and my children to get out of the car.
He actually got out and opened the doors and said, get out of the car.
Yeah.
And did your husband say anything to him?
My husband was saying, you know, you're going to get a fine, because I did get the last time I did get the guy fined. But with that, I had to do a statement. It's a long process. And as a mother of a child with autism, I don't have the time to be doing that. Yeah, you know,
you have enough to be doing.
But I do it because I don't want him to get away with it, because it's not fair. It's not fair on our children. You know, poor Harvey, going out having a great day, and he's autistic, but he's not deaf. He knows what you're saying. He understands. Yeah. And when he got out of the car, Harvey's kind of saying, I reattached him to the dog. And he's like, seatbelt, seatbelt. He didn't want to be attached to the dog then, you know, because he's seen
that the dog wasn't wanted.
The rejection, yeah. Yeah.
What kind of a dog is...
He's a Labrador.
Right.
And he's so well looked after. Like, it's not like it was a dirty dog or, you know, he's so well groomed. He's treated like one of my children, you know. So,
and did the taxi driver give you any reason why he had such an objection to the dog in the front of the car?
I says, why did you take us in the car? And he said, I didn't see the dog.
I don't know what to say to you, Cassie, because that just makes my blood boil.
I know. It's not even, you know, we can deal with Harvey. We can deal with it, with everything. We give him a floor time. We have a tutor coming to the house. Now, Harvey doesn't sleep at night. We can deal with all that. But when we go out, all we ask for is a bit of compassion and a bit of understanding and awareness. And that's it.
Yeah, it's not much to ask for. How much will that taxi driver be fined, Cassie?
€250. But he'll be fined €250, but nobody else knows about that. Do you know, like, that's between him and the National Transport Authority. So there's no, like, the next taxi driver doesn't know that. So you're going to have to keep doing it and doing it and doing it and doing it, but nobody is aware.
It's not much of a deterrent either, really, is it?
No, no. No. And then you have to, like, I have to make a statement, and then I have to be willing to go to court if they don't pay the fine. So it's kind of, it's a hard thing to do to get them fined, but I will do it, you know. I will do it because it's just heart-wrenching.
Well, I hope you do it, Cassie, because, as you say, it is important that these things are reported, because it's just not on.
Yeah, we're trying to teach Harvey life skills. We're trying to teach him how to use public transport. We're trying to teach him how to behave in a restaurant. We're trying to teach him, you know, we're trying to bring him out because we can now with the dog, whereas he used to just lie on the ground. So we're trying to teach him all these things. And it's just the stress of somebody so ignorant who can just ruin our whole day, our whole week, you know, just... And when we look at Harvey's little face, it hurts, you know, mm-hmm. It's like, oh my God. And then my little girl as well, she's living with it. Yeah. And for her to see that as well, it's not fair.
No, it's not fair.
No.
Cassie, thank you so much. I'm so glad you called in about that, because it is really, really important that people understand that this is not something you can take or leave. This is actually a legal obligation, and as I say, and it shouldn't even have to be that, but it is.
Yeah.
And you will be fined if you don't take an assistance dog.
Yeah.
Okay. Cassie, thank you, and the very best of luck to you and to Harvey and to your family.
Thanks, Katie. Thank you.
Mind yourself. Take care.
Thank you.
And that was Cassie, and fair play to her, and I do hope, as I say, she takes that one all the way. And now I think we can bring back Sarah now. I think we might have Sarah on the line now. Sarah, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good, Sarah. Now, this is again a totally different issue, but tell me what happened. This has just gone back over a week ago, isn't it?
Just over a week ago, Saturday, a week ago, my partner and I arrived in Ireland from... We took the ferry from Liverpool to Dublin to come here on a 3-week holiday. I'm from County Clare, but I live in Brussels. I'm from Spanish Point. And we were heading towards Donegal, and it was wet, it was horrible. We got off the ferry at 5:30. And as we went not long past the airport on the motorway, one of the tyres blew. So quite a scary Dominic managed to get the car into the hard shoulder. We got out of the car, went behind the barrier because it was very scary because, we definitely couldn't change the tyre ourselves. I rang the M50 rescue because I thought we were on the M50. They were very helpful. They got somebody to rig. They said they'd get a recovery rescue to call me, which they did. And it was excellent. Somebody did come out within 30 minutes, which we much appreciated, as it was extremely wet. We were might as well have been in a shower.
And you couldn't stay in the car, could you? Because it was were you behind the barrier the whole time? No,
yeah. We were behind the barrier. I mean, I've always understood you never stay in the car because, I mean,
it's just so dangerous.
Really raining, and it's very dangerous. There was three lines of traffic driving at, you know, full speed. So we were behind the barrier. And it really didn't take much more than 30 minutes. I was surprised in the first place because it was a car that arrived. I was expecting a truck with the name of a company on the side of it. It was just an ordinary car, but a nice man with a high-vis jacket got out, and within 10 minutes, he changed. We had a spare wheel. He changed the wheel. And then, you know, well, obviously, I expected to pay. For the 10 minutes, he charged €380, which...
that was an expensive 10 minutes.
Well, and I said, can I have a receipt? And he said, well, send me your email, because he had phoned from a mobile phone. Send me your email and I'll send you a receipt. I said, I did that at 18:51. So that must have been exactly when we got into the car. 3 days later, I still hadn't heard. I sent another email or another text message. And it was really, I mean, we got as far as Donegal and we got to Falkara. I didn't say this to a researcher. And we found a lovely garage who, because we were driving on the spare wheel, which you can only drive at 50 miles an hour. And this garage in Falkara and Donegal, they changed, put a new tyre on, changed the wheel, everything. And that was €80 for a wheel and changing a wheel.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you would... Yeah, but now, of course, there is a call-out charge situation, yeah, and it is an emergency breakdown charge as well, I presume.
Absolutely, and we would have expected that. But I was speaking then; it was sort of going through my head, and I was speaking to someone I know who has a bus company and has buses and coaches going all over the country, and he said to me he would expect to pay between 150 and 180 to change a wheel on a bus, on a coach, on a motorway in Ireland. And I just sort of feel we were vulnerable. We were wet. We were in a British registered car. We're visitors. And I don't know. It seems I have tried. Now, the people on the M50 were extremely helpful. They were very kind. They looked into it. They passed it to a contractor. I don't think it's their fault at all. But I don't know.
Was it the M50 or the M1, Sarah?
We were on the M1, but I didn't realise that. When I made the phone call, I thought we were still on the M50, and I phoned the M50 rescue, you know, that they have a number that mm-hmm. says recovery, that they'd send us recovery, but they explained we were on the M1, but they put us in touch with the rescue company, the name of which I now have on my credit card because. And I did try to phone them, but they're not. They to try and understand. Firstly, I've never had the receipt, and secondly, I just thought that the charge. If this is what happens to tourists as they arrive in Ireland,
and get charged €380 for that. Now, I suppose we should say it was weekend, and it was after hours, and it was an emergency call out. So, you know, we will expect loadings on anything for those three things. But I think most people would be pretty shocked with €380 to change a tyre.
It was 10 minutes. It was an unmarked car. It was in a way relatively dangerous that the tyre was changed. I mean, he was the gentleman, he was very nice and he did it very quickly. But I was somewhat surprised and shocked that there was no, usually you'd expect to have like a recovery truck with flashing lights, not just a car that was much the same, well, it's the same as any other car, and unmarked. It didn't have the name of a company or anything.
Did you say anything to him when he asked for the 380?
I didn't, and I wonder, I think we were, I literally might as well have been standing in a shower. I was soaked through to the skin. We were both soaked to the skin. We were just so relieved it was done. And I actually would acknowledge I was a bit stupid not to query it. And it went, we're on holiday.
Indeed,
just arrived.
I know. Anyway, you still don't have. You still don't have the receipt for it. Anyway, give us a shout if you get that receipt, Sarah. I would be interested to hear if anybody else out there found themselves in a similar situation, needing a breakdown assistance on a motorway. What kind of money they were asked to pay for that service? Because 380 euro does seem like pretty steep, and there's no doubt about it. Sarah, best of luck with that. Thank you very much. We'll let you know if we hear from any other callers on that.
Joe Duffy. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Now, I want to bring in Breda Murphy. Breda, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Breda, we were talking about this in the office today, that wonderful documentary on Dr. Noel Brown that was broadcast last night, The Seven Ages of Noel Brown. You think we've kind of let him down, really, or let his memory down by not honouring him in the way we should?
Yeah, I actually tweeted, and I think that's why you contacted me earlier. I tweeted that a statue of Noel Brown should be placed in Leinster House, outside Leinster House, so that all politicians see what a statesman looks like. Because Noel Brown was not at all interested in career progression or in money. And he really was a man for the vulnerable, for the sick, for the underprivileged. And he continued that throughout his life. And I think he did it because of his early life, and the fact that his father died first of TB, and then his mother. Of course, his father was an inspector with the Society of Prevention of Cruelty to Children, and more than anyone, he and his father and mother would have realised that in the event the mother died, or even without her death, that the children could be taken and all would be split up and put into care. And he himself said he would most likely have been put into the infamous Letterfrack school, because at that time they were in Ballinrobe. So she sold every possession, literally everything she had, and took them to London. And within 2 days, she had passed away and was buried in a pauper's grave. And another of their children had to go into the institution. He was disabled. And again, he was buried in a pauper's grave in Ireland. So I think that really showed him that they didn't have the money for healthcare, and that the people who are most disadvantaged are those. And even today, homelessness, we really have to come back to the people we elect into office, what their ideals are, how they represent us, and looking at TUSLA and how they respond, the children that today I deal with and working as PRO of the TUM Mother and Baby Home Alliance. Mm-hmm. Those are now adults who were boarded out, people like Jane Sugru, and there was no auditing of those boarding out facilities. So much of what happened to Noel Brown hasn't ended. You know, there's so much happening, I think, in Irish society that still needs. And we have to react to this. And there's an obligation against within those of us who have the opportunity to speak for the most disadvantaged. And one of the ways of doing it would be to honour Dr. Noel Brown properly.
Because Breda, during in his time, and that was what came across very clearly in that documentary last night, he paid a very heavy price for taking the stand he took. In particular, we're thinking about the mother and babies scheme. This was just most basic healthcare for pregnant women and their children, and the fact that the church weren't going to have that, and he was really put outside the door because of that.
Well, he really was a visionary when you see how he marketed that campaign. He was winning. He was winning over the people of Ireland for that. And the only way that they could stop him was to involve at that time the Catholic Church. And he went to a meeting at the Bishop's Palace, as he said, and Dr. Michael Brown, who was then a Bishop of Galway, also interviewed him. He was not allowed to take anybody to that meeting. There were no minutes. And so it came down to his word against the word of the Archbishop and the other two bishops. So, of course, John A. Costello famously said on the resignation, and he was a Taoiseach, he was also an Attorney General, and he said, "I am an Irishman second and a Catholic first." So basically he was saying to the state, my allegiance is to the Vatican City. And that really set the tone of how for decades and even up to today, I mean, Minister Roderick O'Gorman has failed to get the Catholic Church to recognise what they have done in relation to mother and baby homes. they had failed with regard to the Magdalen laundries. And Peter Boylan, Dr. Peter Boylan, would speak to you about the National Maternity Hospital and the influence the Catholic Church still has. Others will speak about the influence within the educational system.
Anyway, Breda, we're out of time. So your point is, anyway, we need to raise a statue to this man, because we need to not just to honour him, but to remind us of where our allegiances should lie.
Yeah. Thanks, Katie.
Breda, thank you so much. We are, as I say, all out of time for today. Sean Marin was our broadcast coordinator. Mark Dwyer was on sound. And our producer was series producer Annette Egan. Up here next, it's Brendan Courtney.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.